Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. I've shared on this and other programs a teaching I received when I enrolled in the New Seminary of New York in 1997. It was the first interfaith seminary founded by my late mentor, teacher, and friend, Rabbi Joseph Gelberman, as well as thought leaders and teachers from many different faiths. Rabbi Gelberman shared with us a Hebrew expression, Hakol Beseda. Literally translated, it means everything is in order. But his sharing was that it had a greater meaning, that everything was unfolding in divine order. He shared that events may take place that we may not fully understand, that may be painful and challenge our respective faiths, but that ultimately there is a higher purpose at work. The key concept is purpose. My guest this week on Vox Novus, Rabbi Tuvia Telden, searched for this purpose after the tragic loss of his first son. In his quest, he found meaning and purpose in all of life's challenges and circumstances. Rabbi Telden grew up in Staten Island, New York, and graduated from high school in St. Louis, Missouri. He received his rabbinical ordination from the Central Chabad Rabbinical College in Brooklyn soon after marrying Chaya Leet, who hails from Detroit, Michigan. They moved to Long Island in 1977 to establish the regional headquarters for the International Chabad-Lubavitch Movement and help build their Jewish community. Rabbi Telden now serves as the executive director for the 34 Chabad centers in Long Island with a staff of 54 full-time rabbis and their wives. He's also Rabbi Emeritus of the Chabad Jewish Center of Mid-Suffolk and a former member of the East Long Island Cabinet for United Jewish Appeal Federation. He serves on a number of international committees for the Worldwide Lubavitch Movement in Brooklyn. He also hosts a weekly interview show on Altice Cable throughout Long Island. He and his wife, Chaya, a well-known global speaker on Jewish topics and one-time special guest on The Oprah Show, live in Commack, New York. Their family now includes 5 children, their spouses, and a growing tree of grandchildren. His website is 8pathsofpurpose.com, and he joins me this week to share his path and his book, 8 Paths of Purpose. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus Rabbi Tuvia Telden. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you very much, Victor. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's so wonderful to have you joining us today. I must share with our audience that your book, The 8 Paths of Purpose, is a must-read in our world today. So thank you for giving this gift to our world.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Rabbi, your extended biography shares that after Bar Mitzvah, you had sworn off Judaism, yet at the age of 25, you became a rabbi. Please tell us about your early path and how all of this unfolded.
Well, like millions of other young Jewish people, boys and girls, I went through the bar mitzvah mill, and it was not exactly a turn-on. It was a very laborious extracurricular activity, and after my bar mitzvah, I had really no interest in pursuing it. But when I turned 20, I had an experience where I really felt I wanted to search a little bit more to find a spiritual path and to understand God and God's role in the world, and that led me to a yeshiva. After a visit to Israel, and during that time I was in yeshiva, I really, it fit like a hand to a glove, and I just pursued my studies diligently until when I was 25, I was able to be ordained.
And so growing up, other than bar mitzvah, prior to that, what was your family's Judaism background?
We were officially Reform Jews, but there was very little Judaism in the house. There were, of course, very good morals and values and a Jewish community, but in terms of actual spiritual or religious content, there was very little.
You and your beloved wife, Chaya, experienced the birth of your first son, Baruch, and felt secure that you had your basic purpose in life well-defined and were looking forward to an exciting future together, raising a family and making a difference in the community. And 5 hours after he was born, everything changed. Please share what happened.
Well, you can imagine the excitement of having your first child. And then it was like a punch in the stomach. The doctor came in and told us what the situation was. He needed life-saving surgery on the day of his birth. And we were told what kind of problems would come as a result of this during the course of the coming years. And there was a short life expectancy and tens of thousands of dollars in expenses. And it was like my whole world was falling apart before my eyes, and I didn't know what was going to happen to my life, my marriage, my family, future children. It was really a very, very hard stage to go through. And it lasted probably for a good year of really trying to adjust to dealing with this new reality in my life, which came totally out of left field.
And then at the age of 12, what happened?
He had done all right for about 8 years, then his health went downhill slowly but surely. By the time he was 12, he really needed a new set of lungs. And thank God there was a hospital in St. Louis, just a couple of blocks, in fact, from my parents' home, which was able to admit him as the first pediatric lung transplant, double lung transplant in the country. And the transplant went very well, and he came back to New York for an amazing bar mitzvah where he was like a healthy, red-blooded child. But then soon after that, within a couple of months, he had major rejection and passed away.
I'm so sorry. All loss is difficult and painful, but from personal family experience, I know the loss of a child is something that there are no words for and no consolation for. How did you and Chaya process your grief?
My wife and I processed it differently. I can only speak really for my processing of it. But it was a process that really started at his birth because I felt that just for my own emotional and spiritual survival, I had to really go back into the books and try to figure out what was going on over here. Because, as you said, I thought that we had things a little bit in place, although you never know what's going to happen and come out of left field. But I did a lot of research, and so by the time he died, I was devastated, but it was not a theological crisis. It was really, by that time, an emotional crisis, and I went through the stages of mourning, and I went deeper and deeper into it. I really felt that I had to get a lot of answers, and obviously, ultimately, God is the only answer. He's the one who's running the show, and he's the one who's calling the shots. But I wanted to try to understand, why things happen the way they do, and what it was meant for me, and why to my family, and why to my son, and what did this mean for my unique purpose in this world, what I was supposed to accomplish as a result of all this.
The loss was the beginning of a 28-year quest leading to your book, Eight Paths of Purpose. A
Correct.
few months back, I had the pleasure of interviewing Rabbi Simon Jacobson, who you quote in your book, the author of Toward a Meaningful Life. Is there a difference between meaningful and purposeful, and how would you define this?
Yes, in the book I go through a number of explanations. There are many ways that we can lead meaningful lives. We can volunteer for many different activities. We can do all types of great things in the world. But sometimes purposeful is something that's really purposeful for me. I have a purpose in this life. You have a purpose. Each of us has a unique purpose. And just keeping ourselves busy doing meaningful things doesn't mean we're going to have a purposeful life. It can be very purposeful to take care of a sick family member. It's not necessarily meaningful, but it's very purposeful. And there are many activities that don't really have that type of meaning, so they don't give us that good sense of that we're really doing something nice in the world, but they are part of our purpose. And sometimes purpose just doesn't really feel that great. A mom who's a single mom struggling to be able to raise her kids and carrying two or three jobs, that's very purposeful. It might not be meaningful, and she's not necessarily enjoying day in and day out working her tail off, but it's very purposeful. So there are a lot of purposeful things in life that we just need to do.
Your book is entitled Eight Paths of Purpose. What is the significance of the number eight in the title?
I really gave a lot of thought to finding paths that people could relate to that would be very personal. And I came up with these eight paths. It's not based on any previous sources. It's just after really looking at life, and of course I deal with a lot of people and counsel a lot of people, and I wanted to find different ways that everybody could relate to having a purpose in life, and that's why it ended up being eight.
And how do you define a life purpose?
Well, in the book, I go into the idea that really there's a DNA of purpose that each and every single one of us has. And we don't have to go looking on the mountaintop or think that we have some great purpose to accomplish by conquering some unbelievable goal that we have, but that in the mundane life and the little things in life, we can actually accomplish great things. And as a result, I focus on those items that are in our life that are within our reach.
And you use the phrase the DNA of purpose. Is this something within each human being?
That's a very important point, and that's a point I try to make in the book, that there's something very unique about us as human beings. Even the most advanced dolphin or the smartest primate never thinks about what can I do to make this world a better place? What can I do to help my children have a better world than what I had? And this is an attribute which I think every human being has. And it's something so uniquely human, it's really part of our very being. And this is what defines us to a certain degree as having a DNA of purpose, that each of us can do something to make the world a better place. Because I felt that that was something that is across the board, cross-cultural, cross-religious, that all of us share, that is just part of our identity as a human being. And we have such a sense of fulfillment if we really end up doing something that's going to be meaningful.
Do these purposes have to be something spectacular, grandiose, or can they be every day?
It depends on the individual. I think each of us need to do something that's within our reach, which pushes us a little bit more than our comfort zone to do something. So there are some people for whom, they have the ability to really accomplish great things, and if they didn't do that, they wouldn't be fulfilling their purpose. And there are others who, which is most of us, which really every day we work in order to be able to provide for our family, to be able to have financial security, to keep ourselves healthy, to keep ourselves out of trouble during the pandemic, to be able to raise our children in the proper way and have a good influence on our community and be able to help people that we meet during the day with acts of kindness and so forth and so on. So all of these things are really ways that each and every single one of us can rise to the challenge of fulfilling our unique purpose in life.
Now, that's on an individual, a personal level. What about in terms of companies and corporations? Can they have a purposeful existence?
Definitely. In fact, these days it's become a very popular theme amongst many companies. Many studies are being done by Harvard Business School and by others to see how employees, when they feel that they're doing something meaningful, they're not just increasing the bottom line for the shareholders or for the CEO, but they're doing something where they're contributing to making the world a better place. It makes a big difference as far as retention and as far as their energy, their enjoyment of their position and their sense of fulfillment by working. The example I like to use, which is a very basic example, you have Old Dominion, which is it's a shipping company. I mean, you think, okay, what purpose can a shipping company come up with? But they came up with an approach where their slogan for the company is, "We help the world keep its promises." So every person who's on that staff, who's brushing those boxes around, feels like, I'm really doing something that's making the world tick, that's making the world a better place, and I'm helping people wherever I can in order to be able to fulfill their promises. It just adds a dimension onto those 8 days, 8 hours of the day in order to be able to make it more fulfilling.
And what about those who have achieved tremendous financial success in life?
So sometimes that can be very challenging as far as figuring out a purpose. Because for those who have challenges in life, I write that sometimes those challenges, especially when they're coming out of left field, as in my case, or then there are challenges that come as a result of various obstacles or difficulties that they have in life, that helps them define and understand where I need to rise to the occasion, where I need to really face the challenge and fulfill my purpose, because each of us has a very unique list of challenges in life, of problems that we face. And those problems could come from within, they could come from without. They could be from a boss, it could be from a spouse, a child, they could be from my fears, from my inhibitions, from my talents, from all types of things. People who have made it, so to say, and are very successful, sometimes the tendency in our society is to kind of buy ourselves out of any challenges in life, to create that comfort zone, to be able to have things in a state of status quo where we're not going to be facing the difficulties in life, where the little things that come along can be easily handled by others. And we miss out sometimes on the little challenges that we have. So for people who are in that position, I do write in the book about how they can really fulfill a purpose by getting involved in an organization, helping people, making sure they know that their gift from God to be able to have that financial success or other types of success is in order that they should be able to share it and make the world a better place and to focus on those areas where they feel they can be most effective.
You and I are about the same age. I believe we're peers. And in that regard, we both have memories of a time when the government of this country and the government of other countries really worked in conjunction with one another. There may have been differences in parties between Democrats and Republicans and what have you. But ultimately, they were working for the higher purpose, for the higher good of all people. Is that something we can return to?
I think it's going to take a major adjustment. In a certain way, what's happened in the last year with COVID is a rebooting. And if we really take it as a rebooting, I think a lot of us, not all of us, but I think a lot of us could really, on a personal level, keep that focus in mind and reboot to that new normal of realizing that we're all in this together. And as with COVID, we realize that we really are all in this together, because people from all walks of life and all political viewpoints and all nationalities and religions were all affected equally by this situation. So I would hope, and that would be really my message to people, that when they look at their lives in the last year and they look at what they want to accomplish in the future, that they don't just look to go back to the same normal. They really look to create a new normal, and that normal hopefully will include what you're talking about.
Why do you think it takes an event like COVID or a 9/11 to bring people to their best and then sort of forget about it?
Because the nature of human beings is that we like to create a comfort zone, and we hold on to that, and we really want to control our destiny as much as possible. So many people are very focused on that, and they don't like new things in life, and they don't like to have challenges and problems in their life. So the nature of a person is just to return to that kind of state of mind, and they get the message for a short time, but unfortunately the message eventually wears down when people's nature returns back to that comfort zone.
And one of the beautiful things that we've seen in this pandemic era is these acts of immense kindness, almost radical kindness, where people are going out of their way to be helpful to one another, in their families, in their neighborhoods, in their communities. Is that something to aspire to forever?
I would like to see that. I think that that's something that is very human. It's very fulfilling. You know, people think that by doing those things, you're being a goody-goody, or you're just going beyond the call of duty, or you're just trying to impress people. But I think that there's something, again, in our hard wiring within us, which when we align ourselves to that type of approach where the other person does count and helping that person or going out of our way, there's a certain resonance, a certain feeling, a certain vibration we feel from within, which is very, very deep, and it's very fulfilling. It's not just a matter of going out and doing something for somebody else just because I want to do a good job for them. It's because we really feel aligned with something deeper in our lives when we do that. So I hope that those people who did do those things, and particularly our health professionals who really went totally beyond, and other first-line people who really went beyond the call of duty, that they will not just return back to the old normal, but they'll say, you know what, I really felt a sense of purpose than that I haven't felt before in years. And I want to continue that sense of purpose because it really felt good from the inside out.
And in essence, Isn't that the basic message in almost every faith?
I would hope so, that people want to really make this world a better place. You know, the Torah talks about this not in the context of being a Jewish teaching, so to say. It's really just an observation. It's called Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam means we're all in this world. All the descendants of Adam and Eve are in this world to take this imperfect world, which a perfect God made, and it was deliberately made imperfect in order that we, his imperfect creations, should be able to spend our lives and do our individual tasks and contribute in our unique ways to try to perfect this imperfect world. So that's a message for everybody, for all of humanity, and I would hope that all religions would in fact be based on that, because that is something we all have in common.
Absolutely. My guest, oh, this is such a, it's something that I'm feeling in my heart as we're discussing this right now, because I'm grounded in that belief also that we all have to do this together. We are in this family, and we're here to perfect, to heal this world. So thank you so much for sharing that message. My guest, Rabbi Tuvia Teld, in his book, The Eight Paths of Purpose. Rabbi, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Book is available on Amazon or Kindle, and in addition, you can go to my site, which is 8pathsofpurpose.com. The book is purchasable through the site as well, and there's an interview of me and some other things. I have a blog on that site as well, and of course, you're welcome to follow up with any comments and questions. I also have my work site as a rabbi is ChabadLI.org. That's ChabadLI for Long Island, .org, and I have a lot of information there as well.
And we'll be back with Rabbi Teldon after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week, Rabbi Tuvia Teldon. We're talking about his book, The Eight Paths of Purpose. So in your book, we talk about the eight paths. The first is making the world a better place. How may the average, everyday person do this?
So making the world a better place is something that I think each one of us can do. There are two parts to making the world a better place. The second, one of the other paths is making our local community a better place. So there's the aspect of just being involved and volunteering in the PTA, as a volunteer fire person, of doing things in the community, cleaning up in the local cemetery, little things that each and every single one of us are able to do. On a larger scale, as far as making the world a better place, when I give to a charity that's saving the whales in Alaska or helping indigent children in Peru or doing something like that, or get involved with politics, and I want to do something that's going to have a larger ripple effect as far as being able to do something more than just my local community. So in our democracy, there are many opportunities that we have where we can actually have that effect. And it doesn't have to be the quantity. You know, we should work in such a way and aspire to have as best and as good an effect that we can have. Doesn't mean we give away more money than we can afford or more time than we can afford, but at least we know that we're trying to fulfill our God-given potential to do what we have the ability to do to make this world a better place.
Let's talk about that for a second in terms of the local community. Is there a feeling that we get? Is there a way that we can viscerally express an experience when we have that calling to that purpose?
I think that very often people who do get involved in local issues do feel somewhat of a kindred brotherhood with whatever cause they get involved in. Otherwise, they're not going to be volunteering their time for something that they don't feel an inner connection to. So you might feel a connection to one thing, and I'll feel a connection to something totally different. And there's a reason for that and a purpose for that. And we're not all, you know, mass-produced in a way that we're all going to be interested in being on the PTA. So I think there's definitely a pull that certain organizations do have for us. What I would like to suggest is that when people do feel that pull, that they don't resist it. I think some people resist it, or they make excuses for themselves, or they say, oh, no, that's not for me, or, you know, if I'm going to go, I don't know anybody there, or so forth and so on. And so sometimes we have to be a little purpose brave, so to say, as far as saying that, listen, I want to fulfill a purpose, and I need to be there at that time in order to be able to explore what this is about and see if it talks to me. And if it does talk to me, I know that's where I belong.
Let's share a little bit more about what we just discussed. In my life, in my experience, and I shared this with you when we spoke offline, there's been a number of wonderful synchronicities. And when I say synchronicity, I'm talking about the expression synchronicity means a meaningful coincidence, something that has no causal aspect to it, but brings you in touch with someone or something that delivers a message or brings some type of connection to you. When you do that, you have three choices. You can either act upon it, you can file it away for some later time if you don't feel it requires an immediate response, or you can forget about it completely. And I've found in my own personal spiritual path that every time that I've resonated and acted immediately, something wonderful has happened. Is that something available to each of us?
Interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because we believe in something called Hashgacha Pratis in Hebrew. Hashgacha Pratis means divine providence in a very detailed manner. In other words, that God is involved in our lives, and that the things that happen to us are not just by accident or by, you know, meaningful coincidence. That when we encounter somebody, let's say on the bus, or we sit next to somebody in the restaurant, or we're involved in something that happens all of a sudden, or somebody comes to us to ask for help in a time and a place where perhaps we weren't even expecting them and we're not really prepared. But we should really look at these opportunities that we face during the day as just that, opportunities. They're not just chance encounters, but each one of them is perhaps God's way of sending us a little tap on the shoulder and saying, you know, this is something I'd like you to pay attention to, because there's something in your soul that gives you that tool that's needed to fix this particular situation, to improve it, to heal it, to raise it, to elevate it, whatever it might be. And that's sometimes the reasons why we are where we are, why we meet who we meet, why we work with who we work with. And when we start to infuse that sense of purpose, that what I call the dimension of purpose, into the encounters that we have, not only during the day, but also in our larger life as far as the long-term relationships we have, they take on a different meaning. They look a little different. They feel like, you know what, if I look at this with different glasses and look at this situation from a purpose perspective, it's going to look a little different. And somebody might make fun of me, might laugh at it, might think it's childish, or it's, you know, you're not in touch with reality. But I agree with you. If a person does pursue them, they will find that it does open up doors that they never thought could be opened before. Not all the time, but enough times, I think, that it will definitely help us to have the inner strength to pursue that a little more willingly.
And also, when in my personal experience, and I can't speak for others, but every time that I've accepted that opening, that open door, every time that I've acted upon that which was presented to me, there seemed to be a natural flow. It seemed to be, as you say, you know, God's plan, preordained, and just so simple. It was not difficult. It was not an obstructive process. It was a naturally flowing process.
Interesting. Well, first of all, I must say that you're very blessed to be able to say that and to be able to actually experience all of those encounters in the way that you do. I think, unfortunately, especially in our society, our very security-conscious society, we're always somewhat suspicious of new encounters or people that we don't know or strangers and situations that we're not used to. And that's very unfortunate because, in a certain way, we're cheating ourselves out of new horizons, new emotions, new feelings, new knowledge, new acquaintances that you never know where all of those new things could lead to and how they could better our lives and how they could open up new doors. So I would definitely encourage people, of course, not to do anything that's perhaps compromising on security, but to make a small experiment in their lives. And try the next time a quote-unquote synchronization or a coincidence or something happens that catches their attention. Instead of perhaps having a knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, no, I'm not interested in this. I want to keep the status quo and I know who that is and I'm afraid, whatever the situation might be. But instead to try it out and take a taste and put your toe into the water and see how it tastes and where it goes. And you might be very pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely. So we talked about the first and second paths of purpose. The third and fourth paths of purpose, what are they and how may we engage in them?
So the first is procreation, is having children, raising children, struggling to afford children. And I put that in there because I think that's probably one of the most purposeful things we can do, is to really bring a new generation into this world. It could happen through adoption. It could happen through many different ways. Unfortunately, not everybody is blessed with children. And of course, in such a situation, it's very difficult. And there's some people who decide they don't want to have children. And it's not the only path. It's just one of eight paths. And I'm not critical of people who make that decision for themselves for whatever reason. But I think that when people realize, and incidentally, interesting enough, even according to the biologists or evolutionists, this is in their mind, in a non-deistic world, this in their mind is the purpose of humanity, is really to procreate and to continue the species. So it's really very much built into our wiring. But I think that for people to know that raising our children is not just status quo. It is really such an important part of our purpose and the values you give that child and the way that you educate that child and the way you raise that child and the events in their life. You know, even in disciplining the child, if you feel that I have a purpose in raising this child and making sure this child is very capable of in turn raising their own children and fulfilling this purpose path, I might deal with it differently. I might have a different way of educating them, of talking to them, of being able to teach them, of really being the parent that I feel I need to be if I'm doing this as part of fulfilling my purpose. It's really an inspiration, I hope, to go beyond knee-jerk reactions in parenting, which is all too common because many of us are just overwhelmed by life and it's very difficult to have all the responsibilities that we have in raising children. The fourth path of survival is really just making sure that we stay healthy. And of course, I wrote this before the pandemic started, but it's making sure that we're healthy and that we have financial security, which are in and of itself very important purposes for us to fulfill. And nobody should think that that's just a trivial part of my life. It's a necessity. It's a means to an end. It's just getting the first base, and then everything else after that is going to be maybe fulfilling a purpose. No, that is very purposeful. And if sometimes we're in situations where we have to take care of our own survival before we can really even think about going out into the world. I put an example in the book about a young man who unfortunately had been abused by a family member as a young child, and he needed to really go for heavy-duty therapy before he was even in a position to think about not only procreation, but think about how to heal the world. He had to heal himself first. So these are all situations where we really need to look inside and look at ourselves and see how we can make sure that we're fulfilling in a positive way with energy, with enthusiasm. We're not just surviving, we are not just existing, we are really fulfilling a purpose by doing what we do to stay healthy and to provide for ourselves and our family.
You define the fifth path, and I quote, as treating all of the tests, obstacles, and challenges of our life as important ingredients in fulfilling our life purpose. You and Chaya certainly lived this, but how may those of us who have followed a mostly mundane path embrace this?
Well, if each of us would make a list of the obstacles and difficulties that I have in my life, and again, they could be internal, they could be external, but I think you will find that there are no two human beings in the world who are going to make the same list. Each of us has a unique, custom-made list. And when I say custom-made, you know, I'm talking to people who understand there's a spiritual dimension and that God has a unique purpose for each and every single one of us. And I think this path is really, this is part of why I got involved in this in the first place, because of my son and the challenges and tests and tribulations that we had as a result of raising our son and having him and dealing with his death on a very personal level. But that this was not something that was just random. It's not just that I happen to be one of the statistics of a parent who got cystic fibrosis, and we never even heard of it. I mean, it's a hereditary disease that we never heard of in the family at all. So each of us has that unique list. And if we look at that unique list and we say, you know what, this is God's way of really giving me some insight into what my unique purpose is, because this is my unique list, my custom-made list. No one else has this list. So even if the problems are small little problems, they're mundane problems, they're mundane in the sense that, you know, almost everybody deals with relationship issues or deals with sustenance issues, or I'm not making enough money, or I can't afford all the things I want. Okay, so these are things that I need to deal with. How should I have a better attitude? How can I perhaps overcome these tests and obstacles? You know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who's the teacher, our master, our rabbi in the Chabad movement around the world, told a woman who came to him with a list of her problems and told her a piece of advice, which to me just, if you forget everything from this interview, but remember this line, it's something that could really last you for years. And he said to this woman, "You don't have problems, you have challenges." The point being that we who are experiencing all these difficulties, we look at it as, wait a second, I wasn't looking for this obstacle. I wasn't looking for this problem in my life. This is a distraction from my purpose. This is not my purpose at all, as we felt, or at least as I felt initially when my son was born. And we often do that. We look at the problems we have in life as, oh, you know, I got to get through this, or I got to get over it, or I got to just, you know, solve this, and then it can get back to normal, or get back to my life, or I get back to fulfilling what I wanted to fulfill. But as I mentioned in the beginning, sometimes fulfilling purpose doesn't necessarily feel good, or it doesn't always come tied in a bow with a nice smell and a nice taste. And sometimes it's really getting down into nitty gritty of doing things in life that we are so needs to do, that my soul needed to go through whatever I went through. Why? Only God knows. I can't explain that, but I needed to go through that. It says you go through your challenges in life and everybody goes through their individual challenges, that there's a soul connection there. Why this soul needs to go through, as if God has a list before your soul comes into this world. Okay, you're going to be in this family. It's going to be great. You're going to have many blessings. But during the course of your life, these are five major challenges this soul needs to be able to be elevated, to be able to be refined, to be able to accomplish its unique purpose in this world. And that really defines our uniqueness to a great degree, is how we're able to face those challenges, not obstacles, but those challenges in life, and also how we're able to develop our talents, our opportunities, our good aspects, our good qualities that we've been gifted with, whether it be through our environment or through our upbringing or through our genetics, that we all do have certain gifts also, that those are things we need to develop as well. So I think it's a very, very important part of life that we too often look at as a obstacle, and we should really redefine it as a real opportunity for growth. Because when we face challenges, and you and I know both know, I mean, what are movies made of? A movie that's made of a person who has no challenges in life is not going to go too far. You know, it's not going to be a best-selling book at all. If just, you know, stories of how a person just lives a life on $2 billion and spends it all by the time they finish this life. Okay, great, you know, but it's not really dramatic. It's not exciting. It's not. There's no growth involved necessarily. There's not a person stepping out of their comfort zone and being forced and pushed to be able to become something better, somebody better than they were beforehand, and being able to overcome those obstacles and still holding their head high and strong and being able to really you know, make a contribution to their environment as a result. That's when we really see our personality, and that's when our biography really takes on an extra dimension where it's, this is a person who really, really filled their life with meaning and with great accomplishments and fulfilled a meaningful purpose.
My guest is Rabbi Tuvia Telden. His book, Eight Paths of Purpose. We'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week, Rabbi Tuvia Telden, his book, The Eight Paths of Purpose. The sixth path in your book, Eight Paths of Purpose, is inner change. What are some of the tools of inner change?
So this part of the purpose path is very important because we all have complicated interiors. We all have childhoods where we have, you know, sometimes great experiences, sometimes some difficult experiences, sometimes some very paralyzing experiences, sometimes very uplifting experiences. But we are part of the world that needs to be changed and fixed and elevated. And there's no reason why this shouldn't be a path to actually focus on changing ourselves, elevating ourselves, making ourselves better people, dealing with our anger, dealing with our difficulties, dealing with our arrogance, dealing with our impatience, dealing with whatever it might be that we're dealing with. And again, it's very difficult for people to change. Most people try their hardest to create this comfort zone where they just feel that, listen, I'm okay, you're okay, which is a poisonous statement in a purposeful life. And they feel like, just accept me for who I am, and this is where I'm at, and that is not acceptable in a life of purpose. I don't mean not acceptable in the sense that, you know, anybody would reject such a person, but I'm just saying if a person aspires to really make the world a better place, they really need to take an honest look at themselves and say, what is it within me that also needs to become a better place? As I mentioned before, you can have a child who suffered from abuse as a young person who really has to go through a lot of inner turmoil, a lot of inner change in order to be able to look outward in order to make the world a better place. You also have people who have fears, who have addictions, who have all types. I mean, I don't need to list the situations. There are thousands of situations that people find themselves in. And one of the things that I find is very important is for people to take ownership of their lives. What I mean by that is that they need to really see how they fit into the bigger picture. What is my position in this world? And what can I do that's unique? What abilities do I have that I can make a contribution to make the world a better place? And included with that is really knowing what my baseline is. And part of coming in touch with and understanding what our baseline is knowing what my inner capabilities are. What drawbacks do I have? What talents do I have? What do people like about me? What do people dislike about me? And sometimes this can be a very difficult process. Sometimes it's a little painful. But I think the process is well worth it, because once we have much more of a level of self-knowledge, we're able to be much more effective in our world, whether it be our tiny world, whether it be just our family, whether it be our community or much larger. And so I really encourage people who want to fulfill a purpose in life but feel for whatever reason that they have a blockade from the inside out, that they try this out, that they try really looking in the inside. You know, a lot of people are afraid of the word purpose because they don't know who to trust, and they don't know, you know, there's so many people around to tell your purpose is this, your purpose is that. I wanted to, when I first sat down, so to say, to try to figure this out, I felt like, you know, there is a purpose for all of humanity. That's something that is a basic premise of most every religion, and for Judaism, for sure. But it has to be something that is not coming from the outside. It's something coming from the inside. Something that I don't need anybody to convince me of. It's something that I can feel in my guts, and I don't need any sage out there telling me what my purpose is. So this purpose of feeling that I want to make the world a better place, I want to make it better for my children, better for my community, I want to leave my mark on the world, so to say, this is something that all of us can trust. But if we're not in touch with that, if we're, for whatever reason, afraid to come in touch with that, there's a blockade going on, perhaps emotionally, perhaps intellectually, perhaps in other ways, that is stopping us from feeling that freedom to connect to a sense of purpose. And that itself needs attention, because it's perfectly natural for a person to want that their children should have a better place to live than the way we grew up. And if we don't feel that, there's something we need to do to try to explore what's going on the inside. So that's really the sixth path of developing those tools, getting help from people, talking to our confidants, maybe going to a counselor, a therapist, a life coach, somebody who can help us to target and pinpoint, you know, what it is that I can do to contribute in a safe, healthy, well-rounded way to making this world a better place. And when we, as I said before, when we put our big toe into the water and we try it out and we feel that resonance and we feel that sense of alignment with our soul, with Hashem, with God, we feel that sense of alignment with our purpose, with our inner self, our inner voice, our inner whisper, then I think that that'll give us the encouragement and the energy, the inner energy and inner strength we need to sometimes overcome those internal blockades that are stopping us from doing that.
The seventh path is seeing events and experiences in our lives as an opportunity to create positive change. And we've actually sort of touched upon those before. The eighth path is connecting to and finding purpose in our respective faiths and belief in a higher power. What is the power in purposeful faith and spiritual practice?
So the power is really God. The power is that when I'm talking to a person, I wanted to write the book in a way that it could be something that a person who doesn't believe in God could really get a lot of information. And of course, for somebody who does believe in God, could really get a lot of inspiration and ideas and new vistas as far as how to fulfill purpose. I find that religions in general including Judaism. You know, they have great morals and great values, and they're very, very, the wisdom is obviously incredible and infinite, but they don't necessarily speak to your unique purpose, my unique purpose, every individual's unique purpose. And that was the contribution I wanted to make with this book, is to bring the goodness and the great wisdom and the infinite sense of wonderment that we have when we think about God, and bring it down to how it relates to me. Why was I created? What is God looking for in my life? And that's really what many of the previous steps that we talked about deal with, especially the tests and the obstacles in life, how they're uniquely made. That's my custom list. But the religion inspires us in such a way that all eight paths are really one path. They're not eight different paths. We can choose individual paths, but all of them are coming from a central, you know, the center of the wheel with many spokes, where you're feeling that there's a God in this world. God created me for a purpose. I have my unique role, and I want to do all these paths. I want to have children. I want to make the world a better place. I want to see God's hand in things that are happening around me in this world. I want to be able to make the world at large better by doing certain things or giving to charity in certain areas. I want to, I want to do all these things that are in the paths of purpose. And in particular, I'm sure in each religion, by following the edicts and the Judaism, we call the mitzvahs, the commandments, the traditions, following them, that also is a purpose. That gives us a connection. That makes us really aligned with our belief system and with the God that we believe in. So it's a beautiful way to align. And then in the beginning of that chapter, I point out something that I found very interesting, and that is that God really, as I mentioned before, hardwired us with this purpose, but he hardwired us with some other things as well. He hardwired us with a paradox of purpose, which is that human beings are the only ones in this whole creation that don't, by nature, follow their purpose. We're the only ones who have to search to discover our purpose. Every other molecule and cell in the universe knows exactly, and not necessarily knows in a conscious way, but does exactly what it is programmed to do. We have free choice. We have free choice to believe in God, not believe in God, to follow a purpose, not follow a purpose, to believe in evil and good or not, or choose which one we want to get involved with or be active with. So that's also a godly creation. God created us with that type of free choice. And God also created us with that sense of fulfillment that we get when we are aligned with a purpose, that we do feel that sense of connectivity. And that's something I think that's also a godly creation, that we're able to really feel good about what we do and that we are internally connected, because even though the rest of the universe is doing exactly what their purpose is all about, but they're not feeling some inner sense of fulfillment when they actually do that. They're just doing it because that's what they do. That's what they're programmed for. When we choose to do something that's purposeful and we feel that inner sense of alignment and that beautiful sense of fulfillment, then that's a godly gift as well. And I think that all combined, it really creates a beautiful scenario that gives us a sense of, wow, God just created this incredible world, and I want to be part of it, and I want to make it as beautiful and as uplifted and elevated and as I possibly can, and go out there and fix all those things that need to be fixed, or help all those people that need to be helped, or contribute in one way, whether it be by doing a good act, you know, paying forward, or it be by just helping somebody I meet on the street, because it's all part of really fulfilling a much bigger purpose. And our Jewish belief, and I suppose in other religions it's the same as well, when we do that, we are making God happy. We are giving God a sense of nachas, a sense of enjoyment, of fulfillment, and to a certain degree, whatever that means in a godly, supernal, spiritual level, that we are causing favor on high because God, who created this world with so many distractions and so many things going on, nevertheless, there are people in the world who really are focused on doing something so purposeful that really, in a certain way, is the purpose why God created the world in the first place. And hopefully it all lead to the era when we will have, as our prophets say, when all the negativity, all the evil, all the pain, the suffering, the tears, and the mourning and the grief will all be wiped off the face of the earth during the Messianic era, and everybody will be aligned with this purpose, and everybody will be aligned in a way where they will feel that energy of how God wants this world to be as a gift to each and every human being.
The wisdom of Rabbi Tuvia Telled in his book, 8 Paths of Purpose. Rabbi, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
So the book is available on Amazon and Kindle, and my website is 8pathsofpurpose.com, where there's a little more explanation about the book and an interview and biography and some book reviews and my blog and other things like that. For my professional life as a Chabad rabbi and a leader of Chabad here in Long Island, my site is Chabad L-I, which is C-H-A-B-A-D-L-I for Long Island, .org. And you're welcome to email me at rabbi@chabadli.org anytime. If you have any questions, I'm happy to do what I can to help bring purpose into the world to whatever degree I'm able to do that.
Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us this week and sharing your wisdom.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.